inside. People pray for the sunshine, why they hide, I don't know. I don't care if it snows, I just wanna be cold, 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 cold. Whitefish Bay freezes snow.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and today I'm pleased as punch to have M. Bartley Siegel here in the studio. Thanks so much for being here. Matt, may I call you Matt?
Please call me Matt. Thank you so much for having me. This is such an honor.
What did we just hear? Do you mind? And then we'll get back to you, I promise. But thanks for picking songs for today's show.
That's a song called Whitefish Bay by my daughter, who performs under the name Ani Mari, and who is graduating from the University of Michigan.
Woo!
Here in just a couple of weeks. So. Super proud of her.
Yeah, many congrats.
Thank you.
Yeah. And to her too, please pass them along.
Yeah, she's a very talented singer-songwriter, if I do say so myself.
Oh,
her dad.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And it's so, I mean, it's in the family, the way with the words and
the genes.
The lyricism.
Sure.
Yeah. And do you play an instrument too, Matt?
I play guitar and a ukulele so horrifically badly. That it's almost shameful to say. I have people in my circle who are really they're virtuoso musicians, and so anything I do on an instrument is just so sadly insufficient.
Still, you say ukulele, and I say yes.
Your listeners will not really be able to understand what a big man I am. I'm 6'6" and 250 pounds. So me with a ukulele is a truly. It's very comical.
Have you ever been to Key West yet? Or
I've never been to Key West.
They have a ukulele night at this one dive bar, which I would highly recommend.
I put it on the bucket list for sure.
It's worth the trip. Anyway, before we get to the conversation, so exciting today. To have Matt here in the studio, the book on the table with us, out with Wayne State University Press, hot off the press just last month, in the bone cracking cold, poems by M. Bartley Siegel. And here's, and from Matt's website, M. Bartley Siegel is the author of In the Bone Cracking Cold, Wayne State University Press. And this is what they say, Typecast Publishing. A former poet laureate of Michigan's Upper Peninsula and Academy of American Poets Laureate Fellow. His widely published poems have appeared in literary journals such as Poetry Magazine, Michigan Quarterly Review, About Place, and Fourth River, among many fine others. He lives with his family on the Keweenaw Peninsula, Ojibwe homelands, and 1842 ceded territory, where he teaches writing at Michigan Technological University.
That's
Matt,
me.
Matt, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
And you've got a busy week ahead. We were just talking before we went on air about your reading tomorrow at Literati Bookstore, just a few blocks away from here.
6:30 p.m.
6:30 p.m. And also... you're going to be in Detroit at a bookstore as well?
I'll be in Detroit at 27th Letter Books.
Such a cool place. Yep.
And I'll be joined at Literati. I'll be joined by my very dear friend, Keith Taylor, who's, of course, an Ann Arbor institution.
He is, and friend of the show.
And friend of the show.
He might be the most guested person on the show.
Keith's awesome. And and Nandi Comer.
Nandi, also a friend of the
Nandi
show.
Nandi will be both. Nandi will be both at Literati on tomorrow on Thursday, and she'll also be with me at 27th Letter on Friday night.
And Nandi Comer is the outgoing Michigan Poet Laureate.
Correct.
And so that's how I met you, Matt. Was that you read with Michigan Words. With Brittany and Jonah, you and Nandi came by in the wintertime.
it was December. It was right before the holidays when we were in talking about that project. And
what was it like to see your billboard?
Have to say that...
Oh, because we should say, just a quick recap for folks that maybe didn't catch that Michigan Words, that particular Living Writers episode. You can find it on the website, folks. Over to you, Matt. Do you want to explain it?
So Michigan Words was a Department of Education, Michigan Library, Poet Laureate of Michigan project that put contemporary poets and contemporary poetry on billboards all over the state of Michigan. So it was a truly weird and wonderful project. It's not the, billboards on the side of the road in the state of Michigan are not typically, they're not real estate for poetry. They're real estate for small claims lawyers and sewage pumping services and
guns sometimes. And I don't know.
Gun shops.
Sometimes a camera shop gets in there too.
Cannabis sales.
So many.
And it was Jonah's and Brittany's and my poetry, a Flint poet, a Detroit poet, and a Western UP poet, and it was pretty cool. It was great.
Thanks so much for coming down from the Western UP.
It's a haul. It's 10 hours of road time from Houghton, Michigan, and the Keweenaw Peninsula and the Western Upper Peninsula down to Ann Arbor, and
it's a big state.
And
you're no stranger to Ann Arbor, and you went to school, you've lived here in the past for years, went to Eastern Michigan for undergrad.
Did my undergraduate degree at Eastern Michigan. My wife graduated her undergrad degree from University of Michigan. We lived here for quite a few years in the 90s, and then again for a short spell in the early 2000s. And so Ann Arbor is definitely, we feel a very close connection. It's kind of a home away from home.
And Ipsy too.
Yeah, I never lived in Ipsy. I can't claim that particular honor. I went to school at Eastern Michigan and graduated from Eastern Michigan in their journalism program back in 1998. It was a fantastic program and a great school, and I loved it. But my girlfriend was in Ann Arbor, so that's where I was.
And journalism, that's what you're teaching right now. As well as poetry, a poetry workshop.
Yeah, I'm a professor at Michigan Technological University up in Houghton. I teach predominantly creative writing classes. I've done, I do quite a bit of very kind of pragmatic editorial instruction. We were talking before the show. I've had this kind of pet project over the last, really since the end of COVID, to sort of try and save the university newspaper, the Michigan Tech Lode, which is the oldest student organization.
LODE.
LODE, like a mining lode. It was founded in 1921. It has a long and storied history. It was an award-winning student newspaper back in the 1980s and 1990s, and then for reasons that I don't think will surprise any of your listeners, it followed the fate of a lot of newspapers around the country, and then COVID kind of dealt a little bit of a death blow to it, and so coming out of COVID, for reasons I cannot entirely explain, and sometimes regret, I decided that we got to save this student newspaper. So I've been teaching a journalism class up there and working with the students. This very small dedicated group of undergraduate students who've been trying to keep this newspaper afloat, and they're doing a great job, and we're super proud of them and it and.
And can folks find it online too? Is there an online presence as well as a print?
Yeah, I'd be hard pressed to give you the URL off the top of my head. But if people are interested in the Michigan Tech Lode, it's going to be an easy Google search away. It's LODE, and it's the student newspaper at Michigan Technological University. We don't have a journalism program by any stretch of the imagination.
We don't here either.
Yeah. We have an interdisciplinary humanities program, which covers a lot of ground. It's Michigan Tech. It's a STEM institution. It's a lot of engineering and research focused sciences and a lot of really just incredibly smart, talented students really pushing the boundaries of STEM work. And
how's that going now in the current day and age with funding?
Boy.
Okay. We can pivot.
No, that's okay. I can only speak from my own perspective on this. You know, what a horrible, stupid place we're in as a country and a nation. And I have such a hard time wrapping my head around where we're at and what this regime is doing and just the cruelty and the avarice the University of Michigan and Michigan State have been doing really good work at the state level for the university system here in the state of Michigan. Michigan Tech is doing what it can to hold the line. We've lost a lot of resource. We do a lot of climate research. We have a nationally ranked, really excellent, forest resources ecology program. You know, they've struggled because a lot of their work, at least linguistically, gets caught up in all of this stuff that the Trump administration is up to. But we have a really good administration. They're doing a good job. It's hard. It's just hard.
And it feels like it is so hard. And I feel like for these years, because you mentioned earlier, before I think we came on air, that you've been there teaching 20 years.
This is my 20th year at Michigan Technological University.
That's a huge deal.
It is. Yeah.
What's this milestone mean to you, Matt?
When my wife and I were at Penn State doing our graduate work, I grew up in Michigan. I grew up in Montcalm County, which is the dead center of the mitten, about 55 miles northeast of Grand Rapids, outside of a little community called Coral, little farming community, lots of Amish, very rural. That's where I grew up. I graduated from Lakeview Community High School in Lakeview, Michigan. And then I started going to the UP. And I actually spent my freshman year at Michigan Technological University. Back in the fall of 1993, I was a freshman at Michigan Technological University. I went up for forestry. I was going to be a forester. My family's very hardworking class. Dad's a tool and die maker. Mom's kind of a, jack of all trades, clerk at the grocery store, secretary at the insurance office.
We can do it.
Yeah. I needed a trade. I was first generation college student, but it had to be a trade. So I went up to Tech because it was the furthest I could get from home and still be in state. And I was in love with the UP. I was very into outdoors and backpacking and canoeing and all that kind of stuff. And so being up in the UP and being in the Keweenaw was very appealing to me. I spent my freshman year at Tech and quickly discovered that I was terrible at organic chemistry, but I was a pretty good writer. And I had a.
How'd you discover that?
I took an intro to creative writing class, spring semester of my freshman year.
And that can do it.
And I had a professor by the name of Randall Freisinger, who's a if you look him up, he's got a couple books under his belt, and poet, and he just really encouraged me to pursue it. But he, you know, he was pretty adamant that if I was going to do that, I was going to have to leave Michigan Tech. And so that's when I ended up at Eastern Michigan. And I landed in the journalism program because it's still a trade.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Yes.
rather than a multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary kind of English degree, I ended up in the journalism program. And then my wife and I did our graduate work out at Penn State University Park. I was in the MFA program there in the early 2000s. And it was my wife who came home one day, and she grew up there. And she came home one day and she had found a job at Michigan Tech and she wanted to go. And I was pretty resistant to it. I was like, nah, we can't go to the UP. We got to go to New York City or we got to go to Portland or something like that. And she was insistent. You know, she had family up there and we had our daughter at that point. And she sold me on it and we moved up there and we've never looked back. We've been up there for 20 years. So, it, you know, the institution is fantastic. You know, it's a research one institution, but it's small. There's only they'll get mad at me for misquoting numbers, but it's like 7,500, 8,000 students any given year. It's not a very big university.
So you know people. It's a community.
It's my home. Yeah, it's a community. It's the town gown divide is not, you know, there's just not a lot of space to be on one side or the other in the Keweenaw Peninsula.
Right.
You know, we're all kind of in it together, and it's a very intense landscape, the winter and just the Lake Superior and all of that. And, it's magical. I have a hard time now imagining myself being anywhere else. I am very much dug in there, and it's my place and it's where my people are. And
let's take a short break. Then we'll come back. We'll talk more today with M. Bartley Siegel in The Bone Cracking Cold Poems, out with Wayne State University Press. Hey, thanks to Kelsey Giffen at Wayne State University Press. We've got Jason behind the glass. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers today on the program. M. Bartley Siegel is here in The Bone Cracking Cold, the book of poems on the table with us. Matt, why that song? Why did you choose that song?
The song from the break?
Yes.
Oh, those are all of the songs that I sent you. You guys requested like five or six or seven songs. They are all songs that are about the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So I think the one we just listened to was the Sufjan Stevens song, Upper Peninsula, and Lake Superior by the Arcs, which is one of my favorite songs about the UP. And so I was just trying to pick songs that were either kind of from that place or about that place.
And to prove you're dug in, as you said.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, it's a virtue display of my of my credentials. Yeah,
But I mean, because now, surely, we said that, you know, you've been, you know, you were up there as a freshman in the 90s. Then you've been there as a professor there for 20 years, do you are, and you said it's your people, right?
Yeah.
There's no town gown divide. I love that. I've never heard
there
that
is.
Expression.
Like, I don't want to say there's none, but it's a small town. I mean, it would be the University of Michigan in Saline, right? Like that, like it's a,
right,
it's a
right.
tight community.
But what I wonder too is that, is there people who like, who are still, are there people who are like, well, you weren't born here, Matt.
Or is it
not like that?
Okay, we want to get into the.
And there might be some like the things.
Dirt. Yeah, no, this is a real thing. So I would probably go so far as to call myself a Youper. But if you are a third or fourth or fifth generation Youper, you know, whose ancestors maybe came from Ireland or Italy or Finland to work in the mines, I'm not entirely, you know, they might be willing to sit next to that, but they're probably going to look askance at me. And of course, it's, you know, the Western UP, the UP in general, large swaths of Michigan, like it's Ojibwe country.
Yes.
And so, you know, I mean, you're talking about folks who have been on the land for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And you know, I don't think they, you know, none of my Ojibwe friends and neighbors would probably take too kindly to calling somebody who's been there for three or four generations of that place.
Right.
And there's a lot, like Youpers are... They are rabidly loyal to their land and their place. I mean, there's a strong UP-LP divide. There's a strong sense of autonomy from what happens in downstate Michigan. Your listeners may not be aware that there was a small but not insignificant and not successful secession movement back in the 1970s where the UP kind of half seriously tried to break off from the state of Michigan.
Just to be its own thing.
Just to
they
be
weren't
its...
looking northward to Canada.
No, no,
they
no.
They wanted to be...
They were going
to
be their own thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Lansing does... Lansing, we're frequently left off maps. You know, so like the state of Michigan will
like
produce
the visual rhetoric.
Yeah, there'll be some like visual representation of the state of Michigan, and it's just the mitten, and the UP gets left off, and like people, I think in the downstate area, like in the LP, it probably just largely goes unnoticed. But in the UP, like it goes into this basket of resentments that is never kind of forgotten. And, you know, it's a place where it's heavily mythologized by the state. It's heavily mythologized by...
So used, in a way.
Exploited, I would say. You know, like it's a tourist destination. And we need that and we welcome that and we like that. But it's not without its problematics. And when you get into those discussions about, you know, who's a Youper, you're going to get some pretty strong opinions about it. Yeah. So
thanks for talking honestly.
Yeah, they would. So anybody from the downstate is a troll, right? It's you live under the bridge. You're a troll. And people in the UP are Youpers. And then if you are a troll who has like transitioned over to being a Youper, they call you a trooper.
Of course.
So there's
I
this,
love that word.
There's
play.
This whole taxonomy.
This is a beautiful thing
for understanding where people fall on the Youper spectrum. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me think that you must have also maybe learned a ton as the Upper Peninsula poet laureate, Michigan poet laureate. In 20, because you're
it was 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
Was my 2-year stint as UP poet laureate.
Yeah. How did that change how you felt about your poems or your mission with poetry in the UP?
I've always been very place-based in my poetics. I'm very concerned with land and landscape and identity as it relates to land. I don't think I would really call my work eco-critical necessarily. I think I've been kind of accused of being a romantic more than being a critic.
Some of that's because of the lyrical quality.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah,
in the
I think so. But my, you know, my first book was the UP was very present in that first book, but it was mostly written out of my experience growing up in Montcalm County. But I very early on knew that in the sort of latest batch of poems, the poems that would become in The Bone Cracking Cold, that I was writing specifically about the Upper Peninsula. But my 2 years as UP Poet Laureate, specifically through my capstone project, which was a program I called Young UP Poets. And I went into schools all over the UP. I got into all of the five ISDs in the UP.
What is ISD?
Intermediate school districts. So there was no conceivable way that I could get into every school in the UP. But I tried, just in terms of equity, I just tried to make sure that I was getting a couple schools out of every ISD in the UP. And that, you know, that meant that I was from, you know, Sault Ste. Marie to Ironwood, from Houghton down to Kingsford, and I was in Nagani and Republic, and I was in schools that, you know, I think most Michiganders would probably not be terribly familiar with, and I got to know kids all over the UP and work with them on their poetry, and that was a fantastic and fantastically life-changing experience for me. And getting to know the microclimates of the UP, the microcultures of the UP, that there, you know, there is an Eastern UP and there's a Western and there's a Superior watershed UP and there's a Lake Michigan and Lake Huron watershed UP. There are parts of the UP that are heavy industry in relationship to the iron, you know, it's still iron ore extraction in the copper country in the Western UP, that legacy of copper mining from the 19th and early 20th century, you know, the lumber extractive part of the UP, and large swaths of the UP where people are still, you know, they're figuring it out. They're finding a way to make their living. Because they're indebted to that, they're embedded and they're indebted to that place. They love that place and they're figuring it out. And it really, that project of getting into those schools and getting to know those kids really brought to life to me just the incredible diversity and just resilience and survivance of the UP. I really got to know my tribal communities. Which not my tribal community, but the tribal communities that I'm neighbors with, in a way that I would not have without that experience. So, did I answer your question?
Yeah. Who is the current poet laureate for the Upper Peninsula?
It was the last 2 year period was a poet out of Marquette named Beverly Mathurne. Who I believe is an emeritus professor from Northern Michigan University. And then I could be a little out of date on this, but I believe they are in the process of selecting the next 2 year, the 25-26 Poet Laureate. I think they're doing that right now.
But it's ongoing.
It is ongoing. It's still chugging along.
I mean, that's amazing, because when Nandi Comer came here, like there had been a long gap before she became the Michigan poet.
Yeah, it was like 1950 something, right?
Yeah. and also how wonderful that Nandi was also up in the UP with her laureateship as well.
Nandi did, I look at what Nandi did with the laureateship in the state of Michigan, and that's going to be a hard act to follow. Like, she was so dedicated to the width and the breadth of Michigan and Michigan poetry in a way that I think it's going to be hard for a lot of poets to walk behind. I mean, in the UP, the thing is, in the UP is like, you got to show up. You want to talk about the UP, you want to be part of the UP, like, let's prove it. Yeah. And she did. Like, she showed up in those libraries and she showed up in those communities and she did the work and they loved her and it was fantastic. Yeah, she was incredible. I have absolutely no doubt that the next poet laureate will also be incredible. Melba's such an icon of Michigan poetry. But yeah, Nandi was great.
I hope to talk to Melba one day here too. I'm gonna get all the poet laureates to come on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear some poems from In the Bone Cracking Cold. Today on Living Writers, M. Bartley Siegel is here. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got JAV behind the glass. And M. Bartley Siegel will be at Literati tomorrow at 6:30. So come one, come all. And thanks for being here right now on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. We'll be back. Back. If you're just tuning in, you're just in time. Today on Living Writers, M. Bartley Siegel is here in the studio, the book on the table with us, In the Bone Cracking Cold. Thanks to the Wayne State University Press and Kelsey there, and the Michigan Writers Series, Made in Michigan Writers Series. I love this series. You'd think I could get the name right off the bat. I don't know why I flubbed it there, but it's such a great series, Matt, isn't it?
It is a fantastic series. It is just chock-a-block with just such really exciting work that comes out of the state that I think is so representative of, I think the second time I've used this phrase, but like just the width and the depth of the poetry that's coming out of Michigan right now. It's a really vibrant art form here. And I think we have a lot to be proud of.
We do. So let's hear a poem from In the Bone Cracking Cold. 'Cause when you were last here in December via phone, I believe you read the title poem.
I read the title poem, In the Bone Cracking Cold. Yeah. When I was on the show in December. I'll share with you guys a poem called Beach Glass, which has the added benefit of having originally been published in the Michigan Quarterly Review. I think getting on to be a pretty long time ago. Beach Glass. Shivering in the morning light, We gather like cigarette butts at the water's edge, our thousand naked bodies in a long chain bent from burden and burned to the filter. What we've learned. Scars are replaced with more scars. Hair grows up from scorched earth. Once, we would have cut ourselves with broken glass so the wind might rush through the breach to line us with fallen limbs and leaves, but beach sand has since worn dull the sharper edges of our pain. Stomachs empty and growling, we've come at last to these shores, copper-wired, gear and pulley, all coiled spring and iron will, our words tin-typed on our tongues. We clasp arms and dive in together, electric and beautiful as bullets. We disappear beneath the lake's surface for what seems a grateful eternity, knowing somewhere out beyond the tree line's dark reflection, where the water is cool, clean, and clear, the long arc of a sandbar awaits us.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thank you.
So that took, that one, you said, it took a while to it's to have the book, it's been in the MQR year, some time ago.
It was like 2011 that appeared in MQR.
So what
MQR.
Is it, like, what does it take, because you knew, earlier you said, you knew this book, like, these poems were coming around the theme of the UP mm-hmm. and the connection to place. Mm-hmm. Even though there were other poems in your first book that mm-hmm. were also influenced heavily, but this, like, how long did it take for In the Bone Cracking Cold to come together, this collection?
I am such a slow plodding writer. I don't think I'm hitting the metrics for what, you know, most writers or most like promotion and tenure committees would consider to be like an adequate amount of production for a publishing writer. I'm really slow. I'm really methodical. I think if you read the work, you'll see just how meticulous it is. I'm not saying that writers who are really quick and prolific aren't also meticulous, but I don't possess that kind of speedy ability. There are poems in here that are reworkings of poems that were in the first book. There is in my process and in my poetics this kind of constant re-envisioning of the work and this constant kind of living, like this. I'm very much indebted in my poetics to the idea of the poem as like the living language, not just the ossified language of the page, but I think a lot, and I spend a lot of time really considering the deep origins of what we do as animals who make symbolic language. And the page is this artificial thing, right? I mean, for somewhere between 250,000 and 2.5 million years, we've probably been making poetry. And for this very brief node, we've been sticking it on a page. And we're in a culture right now which really pays maybe too much attention to that, to its own artifice. Like, it's very in love with its own artifactual productions, the page and publications and all this thing. And for me personally, it's not, if the poem just goes on the page and if it just kind of solidifies and it's done, I don't know what to do with it then. Like, it's, and so my poetry is, and you know, I mean, there's a tradition of this. Whitman played around with this. Many, many poets in the American tradition played around with this notion of the poem as the living language. Yeah. So I'm rambling now.
No, love it. Yeah. I'm just here. Like, I'm egging you on.
Yeah.
I'm like, amen, brother.
Yeah. And that's a poem that has appeared in different iterations over the years as I've thought about it in different ways, as I've lived in different places, as I've gotten a little deeper into what it means to be in this place and to be thinking about this landscape. And the relationship of landscape in that poem, like the relationship of the landscape with human history and industrialization and colonialization and settler colonialism and, you know, industrial agriculture is packed in there. And then just, you know, thinking about like, where do we go next? Like, what's the, you know, where do we go from from this, you know, from where the thing was maybe 300, 400, 500 years ago to where we are now, and what's that landscape like next for the next generation of people, or, you know, generations, 5, 6, 7 generations
down
the line.
That's intense.
Yeah.
See, yeah. Youper. I know, trooper, but youper. This is what it feels like, because you're thinking that way.
It's, you know, place.
Future thinking,
yeah,
forward.
My big critique, I don't know that anybody cares what my big critique is, but my big critique.
This is your show.
I get my 50 minutes to talk about my thing. My big critique of American culture, of kind of like contemporary capitalist American culture, is that everybody's kind of nowhere all the time. They don't live anywhere. You could be in New York City, you could be in Ann Arbor, you can be in LA. You don't seem to really care, except that it's 40 degrees there and 50 degrees there, and there's no like real meaningful interaction with the land, and no meaningful understanding of like what it actually means to live like here and now. I'm a product of that too. But I think when you do move somewhere and you live somewhere and you put down roots somewhere where you have to accommodate the land, you have to accommodate the weather, there's no amount of air conditioning, there's no amount of central heat, there's no amount of any kind of like engineering that's going to keep you from dealing with the landscape. And the UP is one of those places. There are lots of places like that all over the world, all over the country, probably all over the state of Michigan, but certainly the Keweenaw Peninsula is one of those places. And it makes you dig in. And when you dig into a place, the first thing you find in nature is people. The people in place.
That's not what I necessarily thought you were going to say, Matt. So people, okay.
People, you can't extract people from, there's no such thing as wilderness.
People,
that doesn't
are nature.
Exist. That's a fabrication.
Yep.
Any wilderness that you've ever spent any time in is only wilderness by virtue of the fact that some people were extracted from that location prior to you and being able to enjoy it. Right. Mm-hmm. There were people there for thousands of years. I mean, maybe with the exception of Antarctica or someplace like that, but Mars. But you know that what you find a place and you find the people and you find the people and you find the language. And for me, you know, being in the Western UP, I've come to know, you know, my friends and neighbors who are Ojibwe, and I've come to have some kind of at least appreciation for like Ojibwe-Mohan and the Ojibwe language, which is the language of that place. Which is the language that we all have on our driver's license here in the state of Michigan, and all these place names, but it's kind of this elephant in the room that we never really talk about.
I'm glad you are.
Yeah. So yeah, like that, like I just wish people would have an experience of actually being in the landscape that they're in. And the flora and the fauna and the watershed and the topography and the you know, what it actually means to be in that place versus some just kind of, I don't know, Epcot Center facsimile of place, right? I'm probably not making sense anymore.
No, you're making complete sense.
And that's been a big part of the poetics in this book, is trying to really dig into what it means to be somewhere, like fully alive in that moment and in touch with and attuned to the realities of that place, not just the landscapes that we've invented in our...
Or the romanticized versions of it.
Or the romanticized versions of it, right?
Or the historic, like the one story from history version of it, or the...
Right.
Yeah. Let's take a short break,
sure.
And then we'll come back. A real short break today on the program, M. Bartley Siegel, In the Bone Cracking Cold. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. We'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today on the program, M. Bartley Segal is here in the bone, cracking cold, out with Wayne State University Press, fresh off the presses, 2025, from the Made in Michigan Writers series. Matt, let's hear another poem.
Sure. I'm going to read a poem called Elegy. It's about my friend Wood, who the book is dedicated to. There's one, I think most of the poem will be pretty self-explanatory. I don't know. Do we do trigger warnings? Is it worth warning people? The poem is about a my friend's suicide.
Thank you, Matt, for doing a content warning.
Yeah, and there's one thing that the poem gets wrong, and that's that in 2025, Leonard Peltier was commuted. His sentence was commuted, and he was sent home to his people.
After so many years.
After so many years, yeah.
Justly imprisoned.
Yeah, so there's a reference to Leonard Peltier in this poem. It's called Elegy, and this is for my good friend Wood. Up from brown water at the bottom of a honey bear, we drove your rusty red Chevy out to the capital to free Peltier, higher than Cirrus, all pepper and piss. First night, Dakota Elder read aloud my skinny white ass. You laughed so hard you tipped into the dirt, slept wrapped in your long black hair. None of it tracked, man. My beard so gray all of a sudden, Peltier still rotting in his prison cell. Then one cold winter day on a Colorado glacier, you took your life. I look up into these rising blue hills, up into the horde of stars, and none of it makes any sense. Not in a language I will ever understand. Most days, since walking off into the dust, your grinning shadow drapes a thick arm round my shoulders. Side-eyed, I can catch a glimpse, your spirit like a lake breeze blowing through crowns of white pine, whispering, "Hey, fool, what you gonna do with yourself now?"
Thank you, Matt. So he's still here. He's still here because he's got that feel over the poet's shoulders.
Yeah, you know, I think about him a lot. You know, I don't think he's ever gonna. You know, he's with me. In some strange ways, I feel like he's with me more now than maybe he was those last couple of years when he was still with us. He certainly haunts the work. That final line is certainly a determining drive in my life. Like, what you gonna do now? What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do with this? What are you gonna do next? And that's a driver throughout the book. And it's you know, I'm producing some promotion materials at the university for myself. And I find myself writing about that in terms of my teaching and my service and my poetics and how that all kind of comes together. This drive to, you know, what are you going to do with this thing? So it's a really important poem in the book.
And where is it in the structure of how you, because the table of contents, I love even seeing like so many, like your titles there. How did you structure the book? And it's like a hinge moment in the book.
Wow.
Or more than a hinge.
Yeah.
More than a hinge.
I don't want to ruin that by trying to explain it.
Okay. Fair
enough.
You know,
there are a lot of cycles in the book. The book moves through a number of kind of seasonal cycles. The book moves through a lot of kind of life cycles. There's a lot of discovery in the book. You know, how we discover our place, how we discover who we are, how we move through the various kinds of challenges that life throws at us.
And grief.
You know, I write about addiction. I write about grief. There's a lot of marriage stuff packed in there. And just how I see the dualities in life, you know, that it's probably a little hokey, but like, the, you know, there's the good and the bad, and you don't ever typically get one without the other. And you have to hold the, you have to hold so many of those contradictions simultaneously in life to manage it. And you know, Wood is somebody who I think, you know, he was, I shouldn't put words or intention onto him, but I think there came a certain point where he struggled with that juggling of contradictions, and he couldn't, and he, for whatever reason, he couldn't do that anymore. And I think that comes at a point in the book where at least it suggests that out of the possible outcomes of these poetic explorations, there's a lot of hope, but there's also, you know, some of us don't make it.
Loss and danger.
Yeah. It's fraught and there's real risk in it. Yeah.
That is life.
That's life.
Well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we get by not considering that risk element a lot of times.
Yeah.
Except
or we
maybe
keep our
for
heads.
People we love, because I think we're maybe more aware of the risk.
We worry.
For them.
Or yeah. We, you know, there's this sense of like, just keep your head down and you'll get lucky and it'll miss you. Mm-hmm. Right. Like,
just like a rogue tornado.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I think so much of the book is about not wanting, like, I don't want to keep my head down. I don't want to. I want all of it right in my face. All the time, and so much of the poetry is about trying to like effectuate that. Get into that space. Like, I want this. I want all of it. I want the good and the bad and the sad and the happy and the joy and the reverie and the despair and the grief, and that's all part of it, and all part of living in the world, and it's all part of living in the UP. And you know, I mean, I, you know, it's a beautiful place, but your listeners might not know that, like, we had a snowstorm this week. I drove down on Tuesday, and it is January in the Keweenaw Peninsula right now. We've had a couple fool springs, but it is the dead of winter right now. And you have to hold that simultaneously to the beauty of the place and the awe of the place, but it's a lot.
And also this understanding that others don't get it in that way. They don't know, and unless there's folks that come to it over time and connecting to the land, and then maybe they get it. But otherwise, maybe you see the beautiful colors of the leaves, or maybe you enjoy some snowmobiling, or maybe you fish or hunt, and then but
there's so much more on the other side of that, right?
Yes.
And how much of that are you able to engage?
Yeah.
And just being respectful of that. And yeah.
Yes. Not a tourist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be tourists too. We like tourists.
Well, I guess, yeah. I don't want to, yeah, I know. That is something you said earlier. Like, it's important. But I guess maybe if there's a difference, and maybe there is, between tourist and visitor, maybe there's some way of, who knows?
I think, you know, like, just to pull it back to the poetry, you know, people ask all the time, like, why poetry? Why a poem? Why do you want to be a poet? Why do that? Why this art form? Why not be a photographer or a musician or this or that?
Who asked you that, Matt? Did they read your poems?
It just, I don't know that I can like name someone, but you,
okay.
Like,
yeah.
You,
no.
Like,
by, no, that's okay.
Like,
yeah.
John asked me this question on Monday. But it comes up, and I think, you know, personally, it's because I don't want to be a tourist. I don't want to be a tourist in my own life. I don't want to be a tourist in my own place. I don't want to just float over the surface of this thing. I want to get to know something. And for me, I get to know it through symbolic language and through poetics and form and prosody and all of that stuff. And that in and of itself is a metaphor for how to live in a place or how to be alive. Right. This should be a deep dive. This should not be a surface skim.
Because that's what you're that's what you're making is your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And making poems.
Yeah. Simultaneously.
And keeping your university newspaper alive, you know, giving it some.
Yeah,
some,
with the skin of my teeth.
Some, yes. And your energy. And also being a founding editor of a letterpress called Simple Machines. And also for years, you and Roxane Gay, you created Plank.
Pank Magazine.
Sorry.
What? No, that's I founded Pank Magazine in 2005. Roxane Gay came on board shortly thereafter. We ran it from 2005 until about 2015-16 for about a decade. That was an incredible experience.
It's still going strong.
It is still going. It is its own thing now. It's not, neither of us have been associated with the publication since 2016. So it's its own thing, but certainly during the decade that we ran it, it's probably the only time in my life I will have contributed like a seismic shift to literary production in the United States. And we did that. We changed the landscape a little bit in that moment. You got to be pretty nerdy and you got to be into lit mags and you got to kind of understand that tier of publishing. But man, it was so punk rock and we were just so anti-establishment and didn't know what we were doing. And it just went right, and it was great. And she taught. We were at the Association for Writers and Writing Programs conference this spring, and Roxane gave the keynote at that conference, and she was reminiscing about Pank Magazine and the role that played in her rise into publishing. I'm super proud of that accomplishment.
As you should be. And so, what's next in our closing seconds, Matt?
In the immediate future, I'm just kind of curious where this book is going to go. Poetry books are, you know, they're a little bit like mayflies. They don't have a ton of life in them. There's certain kind of benchmarks for what a poetry book can do and whether or not you'll get to keep kind of pushing it forward. I'm right at the book was just published like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. It's doing really well so far. I'm doing these readings downstate. I'm going to be at the Detroit Festival of the Book in July. I'm going to be at the Harbor Springs Book Festival in September. So I'm going to do a little bit of the festival work.
People can check out your website.
People can check out the website. Yeah, I'm pretty easy to track down online And I don't know. I've never had a 5-year plan. I never saw Pank coming. The Simple Machines, the other little letterpress thing that I did. That kind of came out of nowhere for me. I'm an unstudied. I'm an unstudied guy. Like I'm riding this and it's a blast and I love it. And I love the work. I would be a poet even if no one ever read any of it. I'm compelled to the work and I just kind of believe in that the gravity of that. And so I don't know.
That's the real.
I hope to still be around in 10 years and I hope to still be writing and publishing and talking to you and yeah.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for today.
Thank you so much for
having
me.
Thanks for today. M. Bartley Siegel, In the Bone Cracking Cold, out with Wayne State University Press. I wanted to give a quick shout out to the WCBN Art Market and Gallery that's going to be happening this Sunday at Nakamura Co-op at 11 a.m. Thanks again to Kelsey Giffen at Wayne State University Press. Continuing and big thanks to JAV for engineering and music and post-production work for our website to keep that going. And a big, big thanks to Jim Campbell for being our chief engineer, our intrepid chief engineer for so many years. He's retiring now. I'm in denial. I'll miss calling you, Jim. But hopefully we'll just see you more around in the halls and you'll be spinning records and maybe reading some of your stories. Thanks, all of you, for listening. You too, Mom. Thanks again, Matt, for being here today. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And folks out there, tomorrow, Literati.
Literati, come see me. Come say hi.
Until next time, I'm T. Hetzel.
Hello, you're listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor, just a little past 6 o'clock. That was Living Writers. Now it's the Daily Sports Report. Alex Miller here, TJ Fossmeyer, and a very special guest, Lauren Durkowski, joins us here in the studio. So this will be fun today. How are both of you guys doing here today?
I'm great.
Yeah,
how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm just excited to be here.
Yeah, no, this should be fun. We were trying to get this on the books and settled on today. Happy to do this. So I don't know. This will just be sort of an ongoing conversation. We've got the